I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, February the 9th. And it's time to hear from two more candidates running for state Supreme Court justice. There's a primary on February 20th, and you will vote for one of three candidates running. We talked with one of them, Madison attorney Linda Clifford, yesterday at this time. We also talked with a political analyst who dubbed her the mainstream Democratic candidate in this really nonpartisan race. Today we will hear from the candidate that Professor Howard Schwaber called the outsider candidate or the reformer candidate, Madison attorney Joseph Summers. After 7:30, Washington County Judge Annette Ziegler will be our guest. That was the candidate that Professor Schwaber called the mainstream Republican candidate. Judicial races are really nonpartisan, but partisans are watching this one very closely and are involved in the campaigns, as the justice who replaces the retiring Justice John Wilcox, who often rules with the conservatives sitting on the bench, will determine the balance of the court. We welcome your questions for the candidates, as we always do during these candidate forums. The number to call with a question for Joseph Summers is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Joseph Summers is a Madison attorney, candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Good morning.
Hiya.
Do you agree with that assessment that you're the outsider or reformer candidate in this race?
Yes, I do.
Why?
Well, because I think I'm the one candidate that's actually trying to do something to change the legal system.
And what do you want to change about the legal system?
Well, I think that there's a lot to be changed, but I guess my four main themes would be that I am concerned that there's a growing indifference to innocent people being convicted. Number two, I think that we have a growing trend where we allow prosecutors and judges to act above the law. Number three, I do think there's a disturbing specter of the possibility of prosecutions being commenced as favors so that others can make money off of the conviction. And number four, I think the legal system as a whole actually is not orientated into serving the public, but rather it's orientated into serving the interest of the of lawyers and especially the big insider law firms.
Yeah, so what could you as a Supreme Court justice do about these concerns?
Actually, a lot. Mm-hmm. First of all, is that in regards to the Court of Appeals, which almost every time an innocent person is convicted, he has an appeal. And what often happens, and this is very, very disturbing, but it happens, is that if there was prosecutorial misconduct or if evidence was withheld, whatever, the Court of Appeals will literally play with the record, which means they will create a false set of facts versus the facts that are actually contained in the court record. And it's the Wisconsin Supreme Court's job, I say, to do something about that. And if I'm on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, I would say in those cases that basically the person did not have a constitutional right of appeal, I would either vote for have the petition accepted by the Supreme Court or that there be an order that the Court of Appeals then decide the case on what were the actual facts. And if I lost, I would go public with what were the actual facts and how the Court of Appeals played with the record. That's number one. Number two, in regards to lawyers, prosecutors, and judges, we have these agencies and oversight bodies that are supposed to do something about it. Right now, these agencies are basically dominated by insider law firms. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has turned it over to them, and they actually look the other way. In fact, they actually themselves commit all kinds of misconduct. That has to be changed, and I intend to change that in a big way. That is the job of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Number three, I don't see any reason why a Supreme Court judge can't use his position and stature to go around the state to basically alert the public to what is going on. And two examples. Most people in this state are not aware that in many, many cases, judges handpick defense lawyers. I think it's unconstitutional. I think it's troubling. I think everybody's common sense says there's something wrong with that. It is only in the legal culture, the so that are at the courthouse that people think that's okay. But I would go around the state, I would point that out, and I would do the best I could to have that changed. As well, this whole thing of prosecutions being done as favors, I think is a very scary thing. I think the public has to find out how criminal convictions can impact civil claims. And I think that there's an easy way to stop it, basically just say that a criminal conviction cannot be used in any future or pending civil claim. And then you would end, basically, the temptation for that to happen.
I'm going to check our weather forecast and then invite callers for Joseph Summers, candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Joseph Summers, one of three candidates running for State Supreme Court Justice in the February 20th primary. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, 17 minutes past 7 o'clock right now on this Friday, February the 9th, holding a candidate forum this half hour with Joseph Summers, who is a candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Coming up after the 7:30 news, we will invite in Annette Ziegler, who is also a candidate. Yesterday we heard from the third candidate, Linda Clifford. All of these interviews will be available on our website for you to listen to in their entirety at your convenience, WPR.org. But we welcome your questions right now for Joseph Summers, who is a Madison attorney. And before we go to the phones, though, Joseph Summers, give us a little bit more information on your background, your resume, and why you're qualified for the state Supreme Court.
Well, I've been a defense attorney for the last 14 years. Before that, I ran a homeless shelter in Madison, and I worked with the mentally ill. I think that I am qualified. One is because I think I'm coming from it from a perspective where I have represented ordinary people. I've actually done very well at trials. I have won 10 of my last 13 trials against the Dane County District Attorney's Office. I've won 6 out of my 7 Class B felony cases, which I think is pretty, that is not easy to do. One of the most overrated myths out there is the ability of a attorney to get off somebody who is guilty. One of the most underrated things is the ability of an attorney to get off somebody who is not guilty, innocent. And I think that I am the only candidate, actually, that has ever done that. I have gotten people acquitted. I've gotten innocent people out of prison. So I think I'm coming from it from a very different perspective. And I think another thing that says that I'm qualified is that I am the only one that has the courage, really, and the nerve to even speak about what are the actual problems in our system. I haven't heard my two opponents at all bring up all of the, let's say, problems that are going on right now in our legal system. I haven't heard them address at all the whole thing of innocent people being convicted, whether or not prosecutors or judges are acting above the law, so on and so on.
Yeah, Joseph Summers, a lot of times candidates running for a justice position or a judge say that the judicial code of ethics prohibits them from stating an opinion on an issue that could conceivably come before the court. Do you agree with that?
Actually, I think that rule, which I think has been overextended in itself, though, is unconstitutional. But though that isn't what we're talking about here at all. Talking about the problems doesn't have anything to do about talking about a case. There is nothing at all to stop either Annette Ziegler or Linda Clifford from talking about whether or not in Wisconsin we've grown indifferent to innocent people being convicted, to whether or not we should allow judges to handpick the defense attorneys, to whether or not we should permit prosecutors and judges to act above the law. Mm-hmm. These are things that are nonpartisan. These are things that judges should be talking about. In fact, it's the only responsible thing to do.
Yeah. Please address the pending reprimand or discipline that you're facing from the State Office of Lawyer Regulation?
Yes, that's something that people like to bring up. And what I would ask people to do is go to the website. First of all, you'll find a letter that I wrote to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Second, actually, that case is actually a good reason to vote for me. Former state superintendent of schools, John Benson, is in my corner. He's in my corner because he sat through that case, which revolves around the Dane County District Attorney's prosecution of Adam Raisbach. There's sworn testimony in that case where the state's primary expert has conceded that they began that prosecution on evidence they knew to be invalid. The Dane County District Attorney's Office in that case committed all kinds of serious misconduct, including criminal. They subordinated perjury. They were even found by the court to have intentionally misrepresented an expert opinion. They were found to have falsified affidavits, all this stuff. And basically what has happened is the Office of Lawyer Regulation, which has basically gone out of its way to table the most serious allegations, attempted to come up with a complaint against me in which count one is so false it can be proven to be false at basically the snap of a finger. And that is one of the reasons why I am running, because it occurred to me that if the system really has gotten that corrupt, and these people are so cynical and they're so arrogant, that that's what they can do to basically try to get somebody to be quiet so that the public will not know what is actually going on. It makes it more important for somebody to come forward and say, hey, this is what is taking place. And actually, I am proud of that case in Raisbach. In that Raisbach case, that kid was acquitted. At one point in that case, the Dane County District Attorney's Office threatened to financially ruin the kid's family if he took his case to trial. The only reason why today he is free and he's not in prison is because I decided for a long period of time to work on that case for nothing. I talked my investigator in going a long period of time working for nothing. I talked our expert to work for nothing. And, of course, very few people will be able to have three people like that say, hey, we won't get paid. And if three of us would have not have said that, that innocent young man would be today in prison on a case that was commenced with evidence that the Dane County District Attorney's Office knew was invalid.
Let's take some calls. Roger in Fond du Lac has been waiting. Hello, Roger.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. This is the same question I have for all political candidates, and listening to your speaker and being in the family law and criminal law courts in Dodge County, I understand exactly what he's talking about. I'm asking this candidate, will he guarantee fathers equal placement of their children, minor children, during a contested divorce? The law was changed back in 1999, and it states that the court shall maximize placement with both parents. And the circuit judge are not doing it, and most counties in the state, the appeals court are not reinforcing the law. And just recently, the Supreme Court shot down the chance of a gentleman in Brookfield, Mike Langfield, to get equal placement of his children when it was recommended by the court. And I'm hoping that this candidate will stand up for the rights of children and fathers and guarantee equal placement for all parents. That's my only question.
Joseph Summers?
Well, that's an area of law that actually I don't really know much about. I haven't done family law. I've mainly done criminal defense, although the caller makes good points. If the law says what he says, and I got to say, I'm a little bit at a disadvantage. I don't have it right in front of me. But if the law says what he says, he would appear to have a very good case. And I would say that the Supreme Court's job is to apply the law, and its job is to make sure that the lower courts apply the law.
I think that Roger does bring this up at various occasions when we do any kind of candidate forum or legal issue. He believes that there is a gender bias in our court system. Do you have any general thoughts on that?
I think again, I don't do family law, so that's a little bit out of my territory. But I do know a little about family law, though, from talking to some attorneys. I think that the system actually there is very much out of whack, and there appears to be sort of this power given to guardian ad litem, that they're given this enormous amount of power. What people don't realize is that a lot of the firms that do divorce law offer up an attorney to be appointed as a guardian ad litem. Meaning, for example, let's say in case number one, the guardian ad litem from firm A could be ruling for firm B, where in case number two, the guardian ad litem in firm B could be ruling for firm A. And I don't think that's right. And I think the whole guardian ad litem thing, from what I have even seen in the, let's say, TRIPS cases or TPR cases, is actually very much dysfunctional. I think actually that should be overhauled in a huge way. And I think that too is sort of, it's like more that's controlled by this whole insider culture. And the facts don't matter. What actually matters is who's part of the club.
Thanks, Roger. John in Delafield is with us now. Hello, John.
Yes, good morning. Good morning to both of you. I am a lifelong resident of the state and also a person of faith. And my question for the candidate pertains to the age-old separation of church and state. I guess I feel that people of faith are under siege these days by secularists that will bring suit if one whispers the word God in public. And without speech-making, I wanted to know, A, how these types of issues may intersect at the state Supreme Court level, and B, what would be the candidate's judicial approach to them if they do indeed intersect at the state Supreme Court level.
All right, we're going to take you off the air since we've got a lot of background noise there. Joseph Summers?
I'm not exactly sure what he's asking, but I'll take a stab at it as best I can. First of all, is in regards to, let's say, church and state, we have constitutional provisions both from the state constitution and the Fed constitution. I've been married for 20 years. I'm a father of 11, and I try to be a devout Catholic. I believe that basically religious freedom is preserved, and I think that religious freedom means that people don't have to act upon their convictions, act upon their faith. And I do believe that a lot of people of religious convictions in this state have felt that the First Amendment has been basically interpreted to basically say that your religion can sort of be jammed down their throats. And I think that they have a legitimate concern. I'd have to deal with the cases on a case-by-case basis, but I do think that that there is a legitimate concern that secularism has been sort of interpreted by the courts as being mandated to be forced on people through the First Amendment.
Time flies in these things. We have less than a minute to go. You want to give us your 30-second summary as to why people should vote for you in the February 20th primary?
Well, I think people should vote for me because I'm the one candidate who has proven that he has the nerve to talk about the issues that should be talked about. I also believe that I'm the one candidate who has proven that he has the courage, actually, to risk his career to fight for justice. I believe that people should vote for me because I am the one candidate who basically is not coming from the legal establishment, and I want to orientate the courts toward ordinary people.
Thank you so much for your time.
Okay.
Joseph Summers, Madison attorney, candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice. We will hear from another of the three candidates coming up after this check of the latest news. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36, and we will conclude our candidate forum series with the candidates running for state Supreme Court Justice in this half hour by welcoming in the third candidate in our series, Annette Ziegler. And her number once again for questions for her, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. We have heard from, in our last half hour, Joseph Summers, a Madison attorney, also running for state Supreme Court Justice. Yesterday at this time, we heard from Madison attorney Linda Clifford. And now we will hear from Judge, Washington County Judge Annette Ziegler. The three will be on the ballot February 20th, all wanting your vote for state Supreme Court Justice. The winning candidates from the primary, the winning two candidates will advance to the April 3rd election. So this is an opportunity for you to ask the questions and for you to be the judge. You can listen to all of these forums, if you didn't catch them all, on our website, WPR.org, WPR.org. Let me welcome in now our candidate, Annette Ziegler, candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let me give you the opportunity to give our listeners more information about your background and your experience first.
Sure. Thank you for including me this morning. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you helping to get the word out to people. A lot of people don't necessarily know that there's an upcoming election on February 20 and again on April 3rd, and it's a little difficult sometimes to get your arms around a nonpartisan race. People are used to the traditional partisan races, so I do appreciate you giving us the opportunity to be on your program. I am a circuit court judge and have been for about the last 10 years in Washington County. We are courts of general jurisdiction in Washington County, which means we hear everything, civil, criminal, family, juvenile, probate, adoptions. We hear everything. I am the senior judge out there, and I've been the deputy chief judge for four counties, Waukesha, Washington, Ozaukee, and Jefferson counties. I'm running for the Supreme Court because I truly think that having been an attorney in private practice and a prosecutor at the state and federal level and a judge for the last 10 years, I understand and see how the decisions of the court impact each and every one of us and how they impact the users of the court and the real people and real issues that come before the court. As part of the campaign, I've been traveling around the state to I've gone to all 72 counties, and we live in a big state and a great state, but, you know, I think that is no small feat to get around and talk to people, and I've enjoyed that, but it, again, it lets me know that people need to understand that they have the right to choose who will be sitting on the state's highest court, and it is a very important seat with a 10-year term.
Yeah, and it is, as you noted, a nonpartisan race. But I do want to ask you about our political analyst yesterday who painted attorney Linda Clifford as the Democratic candidate or the mainstream Democratic candidate. She generally agreed with that. He also painted Joseph Summers, the Madison attorney we just spoke to in our last half hour, as the outsider or reformer candidate, and he agreed with that. Do you agree with his assessment then that you are the mainstream Republican candidate in this race?
You know, I do not agree with that, and I think that being a nonpartisan judge and having been one for 10 years, I understand the difference between being a partisan candidate and being in a nonpartisan position. I've lived my life as a nonpartisan person. It is a different role being a circuit court judge. You really do not allow active partisan politics to play any role. There's no way I've ever made a decision based upon partisan labels or partisan politics. As a judge, my experience is being nonpartisan, and I think people welcome that. I think they expect that. They like the idea of judicial independence, and truly anyone who knows me would know that that is not you know, a label that I would I just don't think it belongs in the judiciary.
Yeah. Do you agree or disagree with a fundraising letter that was issued by one of your supporters, former Lieutenant Governor Margaret Farrow, that labeled one of your opponents in this race, Linda Clifford, as a liberal activist?
Okay. Well, obviously, or at least I've tried to explain at this point, that that letter was from Margaret Farrow. And in retrospect, honestly, I think it probably would have been clearer for that letter to have gone out on her letterhead, not mine. But, you know, of course, those words don't come out of my mouth with respect to labeling someone. And, you know, how other people choose to characterize their political affiliation, and certainly lawyers oftentimes have political affiliations. That is a difference between being a lawyer and being a judge. And, you know, I wouldn't want to leave anyone with a misunderstanding regarding the letter. Having said that, that letter, frankly, I think is this candidate is there. This candidacy is not about one letter. It's not about the attacks that have been made against me or my family. It's about who's the most qualified person and who has the most experience out of each of the candidates that the voters can choose from.
Yeah, we did play an ad yesterday that your campaign has put out that portrays you as the most qualified or most experienced candidate because you are in part a sitting judge and the other two candidates are attorneys. Do you think you need to be a judge to be a justice on the state Supreme Court?
I think that what the voters have here is three people that they can choose from. And I do think that, and I can tell you, in talking to people from all 72 counties, what I hear from people energizes me. They do want a person on the Supreme Court who's a judge, who has a proven track record, who has had to sit in the tough seat, face the tough issues in a public forum. They want someone who has demonstrated some common sense and intellectual integrity, and I think given my experience, I could hit the ground running. I do think it's a very important perspective. There really is no way to duplicate the kinds of things you see at the trial court level. Just when you think you've seen it all, you see something else, and I'm telling you, it is a fascinating job. It is a very interesting job, but it really is the front lines of where the laws that come down from the Supreme Court are applied.
Yeah. I know that candidates for Supreme Court justice do not typically talk about how they might rule in a particular case or a specific stand they have on an issue that could come before the court. But can you give us an idea of what your judicial philosophy is?
Sure. Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to. I think that it's important to remember that the judiciary is a separate but equal branch of government. And I believe that a judge does have a definite and modest role. I think it's the court's duty to determine what the law is as applied, applying the letter of the law fairly, consistently, and impartially. I think it's a judge's duty to apply legal precedent, the Constitution, and the clear language of the applicable law. I believe that it's important for judges to stay within that defined role. If a law doesn't turn out to say what a legislator thinks that it says, then it's the legislature's job to fine-tune that or to change it to be what they think it should be. But it's the court's role to apply legal precedent, the Constitution, and the letter of the law so there are predictable results for people.
Our guest is Annette Zegler. She is one of three candidates running for Wisconsin State Supreme Court Justice. We will go to your phone calls for her after this quick check of the weather. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, and it's about 14 minutes before 8 o'clock right now, we will welcome in two guests for our regular Friday Week in Review when we talk about the big news stories of the week. That's coming up. Now to your phone calls for Annette Zegler, who is a candidate for Wisconsin's Supreme Court Justice. The primary is on February 20th. Steve in La Crosse is our first caller. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Judge.
Good morning.
One of the frustrating things for me as I vote in every election, and when I'm trying to choose a judicial candidate, especially for Supreme Court, this code of judicial ethics that limits what you can talk about, if you could clarify that a little bit in your mind, what that code means. And also, could you answer a general question about crime? Say, what do you think causes crime? Is it more an individual's problem, or is it more of a societal problem that causes the individual to commit a crime? And do you believe there is such a thing as a victimless crime?
First, the code of ethics, Judge Zegler.
Okay. with respect to the code of ethics, that's something I've been living by for the last 10 years, so I feel pretty comfortable addressing that issue. While I understand it may be frustrating sometimes for people because they're used to partisan politicians who have a political agenda that they are forwarding, and they have laws that they want to pass, it's a very different role to be a judge. What you want from a judge and what I think people want from a judge is to be independent, fair, broad-minded, to reach a conclusion based upon the facts of each individual case, applying the law that's out there, and legal precedent, and, of course, the Constitution, as I previously discussed. Now, those are very different roles. When it comes to putting out a particular personal viewpoint, I think that can mislead people, and I think that's what the code is very careful to address. Because when the public hears a personal viewpoint on, let's just say, a hot-button issue or something, they then would vote, I think, for a justice that matches their policy choice. And, of course, the Supreme Court is not a legislative body, and justices are required to not consider their personal policy preferences when reaching a conclusion. They're required to apply the law, whether they agree with it or not. And so I think in an effort to avoid confusion of that distinction, which is a fairly fine distinction, it is appropriate that we have our Code of Judicial Conduct and its Promises and Commitments Clause that prohibits judges from commenting on things that would look like they are promising or committing to a particular issue. I can give you an example. And it seems to make sense, I think, when I try to give people this example other times. There was a flag-burning case several years ago, and I think Justice Wilcox actually was the lead writer on the case. I believe it originated out of Gamey County, where someone had done some pretty terrible things to the flag. I'm guessing if you took a personal poll of the people on the Supreme Court, no one probably, burns flags in their mm-hmm. spare time or thinks that's particularly, you know, a great thing to do. On the other hand, they, I'm sure, checked their personal opinion at the door and decided the case based upon the law, the Constitution, legal precedent, and, in fact, overturned a statute that made flag burning illegal and found that person appropriately acted within their constitutional rights. Now, that's one example of how a personal opinion really doesn't drive a decision in a case. And so sometimes I think if voters were to vote for people that match their particular policy choices, they would become disappointed when a judge doesn't necessarily rule on a case consistent with that, because that's not a judge's role.
Yeah. Would you be able to address that general issue that he put, the causes of crime, that whether it's an individual problem or a societal problem?
Sure. Hmm. Criminal issues are unique. Hmm. And like I said a little earlier, just when you think, you've seen it all, something else comes in and just surprises you or turns your opinion in different ways. With respect to the general question about crime, I think sometimes we have a lot of people who are pushed to the margins. And there are people who have been victims themselves. We have people who are really very significantly and seriously addicted to drugs or alcohol, and oftentimes, to be perfectly honest, oftentimes that is an element of crimes that I see. We have people who, I think there are people who feel significantly disconnected from positive influences, and I think it's a combination of individual and societal mm-hmm. influences. There are cases where people just have made particularly poor decisions on their own, and sometimes you have someone who just completely out of the blue does something out of character. Then you have other people who have, as I said, significant drug or alcohol issues, that once you can get to the heart of those issues, you really are probably not going to see that person committing other crimes. And you have you know, other issues that play varying roles with respect to each individual that you see before you. So I don't think there's one catch-all that answers every possible criminal law question. But as a general rule, I think that, you know, obviously we have issues we need to deal with. We need to become increasingly creative in the ways that we deal with criminal law issues. Right now I've been active in obtaining a treatment and alternatives diversionary program in Washington County that deals with helping early on offenders who have clear drug or alcohol abuse issues kind of receive the intensive treatment that they need rather than potentially an immediate jail sentence. And the hope there is that if they're not following through with the treatment, they get a larger jail sentence. If they are following through with what they need to do so that we never see them again, then they actually get the treatment, maintain some positive connections with a job and with the other positives that they have. It relieves some overcrowding issues that we have with respect to the jail, and hopefully is a positive way to approach some of those issues. You know, we could go on and on pretty much all day.
Right, there's a lot of causes of crime, but we do have other many other callers, so let me get to as many as I can. I'm going to follow with Dave in Mount Horeb. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I was listening to the judge's ad here yesterday and several times on the local radios, and it appears to me that she is biased in favor of the government, in favor of the prosecutors, and in favor of the police. And I want to know how she can justify that when the Constitution that she's going to swear to uphold requires the government to prove somebody guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, and they are presumed innocent.
Yeah, Dave, we're running short on time, and I guess the ad did talk about that you would be tough on crime. You want to address that as briefly as possible since we just talked about crime quite a bit, Judge Ziegler?
Sure. There are occasions when that is required. Sometimes that's a very tough decision to make. Sometimes the tough decision is to give someone an opportunity. Each are tough decisions. I have been a judge in a position of having sometimes to suppress evidence as it comes before the court if law enforcement doesn't appropriately act under a particular situation. I've also been in a position to deny motions to suppress. I'm known as a judge who views the facts fairly and impartially and reaches that conclusion. I don't think that the support of law enforcement necessarily means you're predisposed one way or the other. Frankly, I think it's a good sign to be supported by law enforcement, and I'm proud of that. I'm proud to have the strong bipartisan support of sheriffs and DAs around the state. Given my past experience as a prosecutor, I think that also makes sense. Given my experience as a judge who, like I said, sometimes suppresses evidence, sometimes doesn't, and I make the decision. I think law enforcement officers respect that. They understand that they're not entitled to a rubber stamp, but they do want a fair shake, and they'd like someone who understands how it really works on the front lines. And I think that is why I have the strong support of law enforcement.
Thank you, Dave. Miles in Genoa City. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. My question's fairly straightforward. I'm going to use an example that I know you can't address directly. Wisconsin Statute 941.23 has been on the books for about 150 years. And in the 1990s, there was a constitutional amendment, Article 1, Section 25, that basically supersedes that statute.
Miles, what's the issue? What is this issue?
Well, it's only an example. My question, though, is how does the judiciary address conflicts between existing statutes and changes to the Constitution? I know on this particular issue, there's been like 3 or 4 cases to the Supreme Court, and they really haven't satisfied the answer, and the cases keep coming up. I'm just curious, what's the process for reviewing statutes that are in conflict with the U.S. or with the Wisconsin Constitution?
All right, Judge Ziegler.
Okay, and not speaking to that issue directly, because I think it's important not to, as you said, these are the kinds of issues that regularly are before the court. But the first,
I'm not sure everybody understands that question. So there's a law on the books that says X, but then there's some sort of constitutional amendment that might change law X. Is that what he's talking about?
You heard the question just as I did.
Yeah, okay.
I'm assuming that he's saying when there's a conflict between, or a potential conflict or something that needs to be reconciled between the language of a statute and an interpretation of a provision of the state constitution, how do you do that? Well, I think that first off, you take a look at the language of the actual statute. You take a look at the language of the Constitution, and you remember that when you're asking a question of constitutional interpretation, you interpret it as to its original meaning. When you have legislative action, you recognize the Constitution's not intended to speak to every issue, but it does define basic rights and roles of the government. The first step, I think, is a cautious one. You have to remember this is the Constitution that you're talking about.
And I'm so sorry. We have less than 30 seconds to go. If I can have you wrap that up. No, it's not.
Well, it's a fairly complex question.
Maybe too technical for everybody to quite understand. I guess maybe we better leave it there for now, just because we'll run out of time. Okay. Thank you so much for being with us.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Annette Ziegler is a candidate for State Supreme Court Justice. The primary is February 20th. Thanks to Rita Thomas for producing this series and to Karen Prager for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.